proceed to the third case, Cavan v. Home Loan Center. Ms. Combs?
Good morning. May it please the Court. This case presents the question of whether a pre-screen mailing to a borrower which contains fraudulent misrepresentations about material terms of a mortgage loan product can be a firm offer of credit under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Excuse me. 7 years after this, 7 months, excuse me, after this Court's opinion in Cole, the Cavans each were sent identical solicitations for a home mortgage refinancing by Home Loan. The Cavans were targeted for the mailing when Home Loan, through their credit bureau information, identified them as being homeowners with subprime credit who had applied for credit. This was a so-called trigger mailing, and it was sent out within 24 hours of the Cavans having applied for credit. The most prominent part of the mailer that was sent to the Cavans, or this one was to Mr. Cavan, shows a box up in the upper right-hand corner, and it says, Smart Loan Program, 1%, 4.27% APR. Then it says, loan amount, $100,000, new payment, $322. The defendant or Home Loan has conceded in its brief that the figure for the new payment in this box is a figure for a 30-year fixed 1% mortgage. But Home Loan didn't offer a 30-year fixed 1% mortgage to a subprime borrower. No one would. I mean, 1% mortgage? In fact, Home Loan was selling a product called a one-month MTA option ARM loan. It was a complete misrepresentation that the new payment of this product was $322 for a $100,000 loan. The terms are listed in the fine print in the second paragraph on the reverse side of the mortgage. Home Loan spent 3 pages in its brief trying to describe this product. It spends 1 paragraph in minuscule type on the reverse of the mailer and describes only some of the aspects of the program options. And the description on the mailer inaccurately describes the program. If you actually calculate a payment based on the rates quoted in the back of the letter, it would be at least 50% more. It would be $499 for a $100,000 loan, not $322. However, many of the people who were sent the mailer didn't qualify for the loan payment that's quoted in that minuscule type on the back because it's limited to people who had a 620 FICO score. For example, Mr. Cavan had a FICO score that was in the bottom 5% in the country. He would have had to pay more than $499. In addition, that box, which is the most prominent part of the mailer, talks about a 4.27% APR. But if you look at the back of the mailer, for a $100,000 loan, the APR is stated to be 5.16% for a $100,000 loan. So on the front of the mailer, it says 4.27. On the back, it says 5.16. APR is a term of art defined by the Truth in Lending Act in the credit business. It allows a consumer to compare interest rates because the APR is computed using the same terms. A misrepresentation of the APR in advertising is serious indeed. Those like the Cavan who were targeted to receive this mailer were particularly vulnerable to the low payment because these were people who were subprime borrowers in the market for credit, who had just been given a legitimate quote from another lender and who knew how much they were paying for the loan, and it's likely that they were not paying $322 for a $100,000 loan. This court in Cole held that a firm offer of credit under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the consumer must be given the terms attached to the credit to determine whether or not it is advantageous to accept the offer. Quoting the FTC, this court stated that a consumer needs to know what type of credit is being offered, what are the terms of the credit. If terms are missing or the offer is unintelligible, inherently confusing, contradictory, or buried in fine print, the question is raised as to whether or not the offer is a firm offer of credit or whether it's a mere solicitation. Furthermore, in the December 2000 FRB 2004 report to Congress on unsolicited written offers of credit, the receipt of the pricing information is the benefit of the bargain that Congress struck with the industry for consumers giving up their right to privacy. It allows consumers to benefit from competition among lenders. If they can compare pricing, then, of course, it allows them to shop. But here, they're giving the wrong information. They are targeting people who have applied for credit, who are subprime, and telling them their new payment is going to be $322 on a $100,000 loan when it's not.
Now, if they inquire further, which you think should not be necessary, I guess, should all be here, they're going to either find out that they can or can't participate. And also, if the credit, whatever that preliminary search is where you get the basics and without their permission you can't get into the full credit report. Once they give permission to the full credit report, that's when you find out they don't qualify. And you're saying that's the problem here, because I guess you're saying that the firm offer of credit does not present, fair value?
Exactly. The question is whether or not there is value to the consumer for giving up their right to privacy. What would happen here if the Cavins had responded to this mailer? They would have called the phone number, and they would have been subjected to salesmen, trained salesmen, who were paid on commission in order to, at that point, they would ask them to pull their credit rating anyway. There would be no difference between the way the Cavins would have been treated as a result of getting this mail and having their credit bureau information accessed than anybody else who contacted Home Loan separately.
So why is it bad to encounter a trained salesman who's on commission? Does that imply that he's crooked or something?
Well, let me just tell you, Your Honor, that there are the terms of this loan, and this involved this option arm loan. An option arm loan is an adjustable rate mortgage where they have an option of paying a minimum amount less than the fully amortizing payment. The problem is that the mailer does not, and keep in mind, the borrowers don't know this. It's not in the mailer. There's nothing in the mailer that says, oh, by the way, if you take less than a fully amortizing payment, after 5 years, you're going to be hit with a huge increase in your payment. How can they use the pricing information through this mailer in order to compare what's out there in the market? Now, if they have to have their credit report pulled in order to find out what the terms are, that's a negative aspect for the consumers, because that shows up in their credit report as a negative item. If you make more than a few number of inquiries in your credit, that's a negative aspect.
So the key here is not so much you would claim to have the deceptive nature of what leads them into it. It's more, are they presented with something of value? And I can pretty much say that a lot of people, even sophisticated investors or borrowers, look at this and say, that's not a good deal. However, there are other people who maybe can't get financing in any other way, might think, that might have value to me.
Well, I keep in mind that this is not like the Perry case. It's not like the Perry case.
Okay.
In the Perry case, what was presented was a very unappealing financial deal. But every term of the credit that was being offered was presented to the consumers because it was a credit card, and they had the federally required disclosures in the mailing. We don't have that here.
Well, not everything isn't in there. I know the district court went through it kind of thoroughly and concluded there was enough.
Well, I believe the district court was wrong, and here's why.
Well, let me, as you're answering that, I mean, the small print is there. I know your position is the print should have been bigger, but on that second page, it's pretty clear that the 1% fixed rate is for 30 days.
In fact, though, if you look at the testimony of the person who supervised the salesman, and we took his deposition, this is not a 1% loan. The 1% aspect, it's a fixed...
Payment.
It's a variable rate APR that changes on a one-month basis.
Right.
The 1% that is referred to is actually not the first month's payment, although that's the way it's described in the payment, in the mailer. In fact, the 1% is one of the minimum option provisions that a borrower could choose under this option ARM loan. They could choose to pay only 1% of the principal in the first few years of the mortgage. So it's our position that this offer is not of value because it's not available. That when you mean
if they got their credit report, they wouldn't let them do that?
There would not be a 1%. They would not be able to get even the first month at 322.
Well, who would qualify for that?
Who would qualify?
My position
is no one would, because they don't offer that. It's a complete misrepresentation. They call it a 1% loan, and they use numbers for a 1% loan, but when you took the deposition of the actual sales manager, the 1% refers to the minimum loan payment, which is not the first month's payment. It's an option of taking less than fully amortizing payment for the beginning term. But then what happens, you see, is after 5 years...
You need to pay a balloon payment.
Right.
Yeah,
well, it's a recasting.
The only thing I want to focus on is that of value to some people who really do want something short-term? Some people, they call them flippers and do all this kind of stuff, where they might be looking at having something for a relatively short term and would expect to pay it off or get rid of it at that point. I don't know the answer to that.
Here's the problem with that, and I think we have to focus on the two aspects of this mailer that were not revealed. One is that the recasting, but the other thing is there's a prepayment penalty.
Right.
So the prepayment penalty means is once they figure out, oh, my God, my payments are going up, they can't refinance because they have a prepayment penalty. Now, recently the five financial regulators have taken a look at the subprime mortgage issues, and what they have determined is that when a mortgage product has these characteristics, which the trial court didn't, that is that the recasting and the prepayment penalty, that these are so detrimental to the consumer that it's an unfair and deceptive practice not to put it into the advertisements or the mailers or the product descriptions. And these are the two aspects that the trial court just cavalierly disregarded and said, oh, well, people should know if you pay less than a fully amortizing payment that you'll get hit eventually. But no, they don't. In fact, the Truth in Lending Act requires that if there is going to be a balloon payment or a substantial increase in payment, that has to be disclosed, meaning it's important and people don't realize it. So
I guess we have to focus on the FCRA here, because there it is. I'm not sure it takes everything into the TILA and all those others. I think there may be problems under those, other consumer statutes.
In determining what the Fair Credit Reporting Act requires, you're to look to guidance from the circuit courts, and we have the guidance from Cole that says material terms need to be included. And then you look to other entities that regulate lending, and the Federal Reserve Board has in 2004 said pricing is to be included. And the problem we have here is that it's not only that there might be some value somewhere, but that they've misrepresented the value of the product. that in order to induce people to respond, and again, people who are vulnerable, who've received a trigger, you know, a trigger mailing, who know what their payments are, and they're not going to get the loan. They are not going to get a $100,000 loan with a 322-month payment. Now, the defendant again points to the fact that it says in the again in this minuscule print, if a minimum payment option is selected, deferred interest may accrue. But nothing in here talks about minimum payment. There's nothing in this mailer that talks about minimum payment. So how is the ordinary consumer to know from reading this mailer what's going to go on? And all they have is this little box that says, oh, I'm going to get a $322 payment for my $100,000 loan, when they are not. That there is no value to the consumer because there's no pricing. The loan will not be honored, and we believe that the material terms must be included in the mailer under this court's decision in Cole, Murray, and Perry. With regard to the question of willfulness, the court, if the court finds that there were misrepresentations, we believe the court can find that there is willfulness. But keep in mind, the district court did not rule on willfulness, and so it would be also appropriate to remand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Cohn. Mr. Varga.
May it please the court. My name is Craig Varga. I represent the defendant, HLC, in this case. Your Honors, we believe Judge Castillo's opinion should be affirmed for the reasons that HLC made a firm offer of credit within the term of art, as that term is defined within the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and also within the meaning of this court's decisions, Cole and Perry in particular. We also believe that Judge Castillo's view that Cole need be applied contextually, so that you look at the product segment, the type of product, and the market segment of the financial services world accounts for looking at the case differently than believing that Cole answers anything and everything about every product that's out there. We also believe that were this court for some reason to find that somehow HLC came up a hair short of this being a firm offer of credit, that under the Supreme Court's view of what constitutes willfulness via the Safeco decision from this June, that Judge Castillo's view of the FCRA and of this court's decisions is certainly not an unreasonable view, and Judge Castillo's view comports with what HLC's view was. So in our view, certainly there's no way that there could be found to be a willful violation, and this court could make that determination. That's an alternative basis urged for affirmance below. This court could make that finding in the same way the Supreme Court made that finding in the Safeco case. Now, turning to those two sort of broad categories of firm offer of credit and willfulness, and I will at some point get to responding to the specific misstatements counsel made. I want to say just a quick word first about pre-screening in general. There's some suggestion that pre-screened mailers are somehow nefarious and vehicles for fraud. Actually, the Federal Reserve Board came out with a report in December of 2004, which was after the Cole decision of this court, and the Federal Reserve Board said that pre-screening is of value to consumers. Inherently a value to consumers, because what it does is it promotes price competition. It enables people to have alternative choices. Counsel said her clients were looking for a mortgage. They were clearly in the market for something. So they're getting a mailing. We may not like getting additional mailers, but it's certainly something that is an avenue of commercial speech. A person gets a mailer and has at least the opportunity to undertake to compare what they're thinking of getting with what this client is offering. So there's nothing nefarious about pre-screening. The FCRA is pretty detailed in how it outlines how pre-screening works. Counsel says everything's got to be in the mailer. That's not what the FCRA says. It says that you have to have established pre-select criteria. The only specific thing that it requires in an initial communication with a consumer is that you apprise the person if there's a collateral requirement, and you apprise them of certain opt-out rights. This court in the Cole and Perry decisions have said that, well, in addition, you need to determine that there's some minimal value. That's not in the FCRA. Some other courts elsewhere around the country don't agree with the Seventh Circuit on that, and we've discussed that in our brief. We're not saying that we're looking to overturn Cole here, but we're looking for a fair reading of Cole in the same way that Judge Castillo felt that Cole didn't answer everything and anything about every offer of credit.
With this pre-screening, doesn't there have to be at least a firm offer of credit?
There has to be a firm offer of credit, but it has to
be something of value.
Yeah, there has to be something of value, but it has to be seen in the context of the kind of product that's being offered. And what I'll say to Your Honors is this is the first mortgage case that you've had collectively of the court where the product at issue has been a mortgage product. And think about it. A mortgage product, you're giving, in this instance, it was a minimum credit amount offered of $110,000. This was a refinance product, and one of the selection criterias for getting information back, a pool of people from the credit reporting agencies, was that they had to have an existing mortgage balance of at least $110,000, and this is a refinance product. That's stated in the flyer. So this isn't some $300 offer in connection with buying a car. This is $110,000. And if you or I were giving away $110,000 to somebody, we'd want to know, I think, a fair amount about what their assets were, what the value of their property was, what their income was. None of that information is obtainable from the limited information that you can get from a credit reporting agency. For that matter, it's not available when you get a full credit report from a credit reporting agency.
What do you get in a pre-screen?
Pardon me?
What do you find out? You find out they've got a
In this instance, the pre-screen requirements were had to be a homeowner, had to have an existing mortgage balance of $110,000, and then they had to fall within a certain FICO score. And it also had to be an inquiry. It had to show that they'd made an inquiry to another creditor where they'd submitted a mortgage application within 24 hours. So what this is intended to do, clearly, is to reach people who are shopping for mortgages. So that's what you
so
get
you get
back.
That, you get that. You get the
you get
information
the names
that
back.
They've actually, they're out looking.
You get, that, you, get, you get an indication that they're out looking, yes. And you get the names back, but you know nothing about property value. You know nothing about a loan-to-value ratio for a loan that you might be considering making to them because you don't know how much their property's worth. You know nothing about their income. You know nothing about debt-to-income ratios that are very common in the mortgage industry, and all those of us who bought houses know that that's a standard part of it. So you don't know any of that information. The FCRA takes that into account, and it says that you have to make certain disclosures, but you can, so long as you have established pre-select credit requirements in advance, you can find out additional information from the consumer, not only just to verify information that shows that they're still within that information you got from the credit reporting agency, but you can apply your previously set credit requirements to that person. And the FCRA even says that eventually you'll get them filling out a credit application. So it doesn't contemplate that everything is going to be known and you're going to be able to say, we're making you an offer of $200,000 of mortgage credit. We don't know anything about your property. We don't know anything about your income. We don't know anything about whether you and your wife are both applying, whether you have two sets of income, whether your property is a single family or whether it's a condo. We don't know any of those things, but we're going to make you an offer of $200,000. That's what plaintiffs want in this case. And as Judge Castillo found, that simply doesn't fit with a mortgage product. And that's why he says that within the reasonable reading of Cole, you have to be able to have an interactive process here where there are information flows going back and forth, because a mortgage product is one heck of a lot more complicated than a credit card product. You might be able to say, and I know Judge Flom was involved in the Perry case, and there it was maybe a very minimal amount of credit offered, but it was what, $1,000 or a couple thousand dollars. And maybe with a credit card product where there's not going to be a collateral requirement of a mortgage in a property, where you're only given $2,000, you don't need all this other information. You're willing to say, look, take it or leave it, $2,000 at 10.99% or whatever it is. And grant you, maybe some of those credit card offers don't have a definite interest rate in them. I'm not here to defend those. But I'm saying that's a much simpler product. When you're giving away $110,000, you want to know one heck of a lot more about what's going on.
You're not giving it away, but under the FCRA...
I mean, when you're loaning it.
Yeah, and under the FCRA...
If they don't pay it back, you've given it away.
I know. Under the FCRA, though, it does... In order to get the pre-screen, you at least have to come up with something that gives them I'll call it a firm offer that has something of value.
That's right, and I believe...
So that's really where my focus is. I realize now that they criticize the follow-up phone call to a commissioned salesman who's well-trained. Now, I look at that as, well, I guess they're going to find out some information or believe it or not believe it and whether they go to the next step. So it's that first step of making the phone call. They have to have at least in their hands something that is a firm offer of credit that is... Of value.
Right, and I believe, Your Honor, and as Judge Castillo found, that there's certainly a lot of that here, and certainly a lot when you look at it in relation to the nature of the product, and certainly when you look at it in relation to other mortgage offers that are out there that have been addressed by other of the district court judges. But to get to what detail there was, and maybe clear up one of counsel's points about the 1%, what the 1% was that was the actual interest rate for the first 30 days, so that the payment amount reflected in that little box in the front is a payment amount that reflects an amortization over the life of the loan at a 1% rate. Now, of course, that 1% rate, as Judge Williams pointed out, only lasts for the first 30 days, okay? But that $366 on the $100,000 loan is what it takes if you run that on bankrate.com or whatever and say, what's my principal and interest payment? That's what you'll find it is, principal and interest on a 1% basis.
That is absolutely accurate
for 1 month. And as Judge Williams pointed out, that's in the mailer, that changes after the first 30 days. But here's the value of this product. One indicia of value is that after that first 30 days, you're permitted to continue to make that $366 payment for the whole first year. Now, it's not going to cover necessarily all your interest and principal on a 30-year amortizing basis at the rate that the loan adjusts to. In this instance, under the example given in the mailer, it would be, I think, 4.122% when you take the index and the margin as stated in the mailer, which, by the way, is not a bad rate, 4.122%. But in any event, your payment may not cover all interest and principal owed. But that's why the mailer says deferred interest may accrue if you choose after that first 30 days to continue to make just the minimum payment.
But so that in the follow-up call, I assume someone goes over that and says, well,
exactly,
yeah, 1%, but what you're doing, you're just pushing a pile forward of what you're going to have to pay eventually. So that's
exactly. But there are also other options, and the mailer, it can't discuss in detail every scenario for everybody, but if you choose a different option after the first 30 days, you can choose to make a payment other than that payment that reflected the 1% rate. You can choose to make an interest-only payment, but pegged to what the interest rate on your loan adjusts to by application of the margin and the index that are stated on the back of the mailer, the 4.122%. There's a interest-only figure that would correlate to that, which the person gets when they call up and talk to this nefarious loan officer, counsel says. They would have the opportunity to make that interest-only payment. They also have the ability to make a payment that's reflective of a fully amortized interest and principal, and they can do each of these things each month differently, which is why the mailer can't state, okay, if you do this after the first month, but don't do it the second and third month, but do it the fourth and fifth, here's what your payment will be. The thing would have to be 20 pages long to do that. What this product is, and for those of us, you know, who bought houses 20 years ago, some of these products weren't there. But these interest-only or option-arm kinds of products have been viewed as being very valuable. The Federal Reserve Board came out with a document that Judge Castillo cites in his opinion that says in year 2005, 25% of borrowers who took non-traditional 30-year fully amortizing loans took option-arm products. Now, as the figure figures show here in Illinois, not too many people ultimately took this product. Council finds that there's something wrong with that, yet at the same time says that, gee, if they'd taken it, they would have been hoodwinked. They must have been smart enough not to take the product. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the product, but you can't have it both ways. But that 25% figure shows that in other parts of the country, many, many more people found this to be a very valuable product. Why? Because it enables you to make a much smaller monthly payment. And in a rising real estate market, the ability to make a minimum monthly payment or even an interest-only payment frees up lots of cash. And in a rising market, if you sell...
See, we've got a problem now because it's exactly the opposite.
Hindsight is 20/20, Your Honor.
If
foresight was 20/20...
But I want to not focus on that. Because what may have been a good deal 2 years ago is a really lousy deal now, et cetera. So that's why I want to stay focused on it. I would want to address one other thing, and that's on the willfulness issue.
Yes.
If you would. The district court recited a number of things, and in your brief you go through a lot of things, like going to the credit companies and having them pre-approve this. That's an interesting, I didn't know that. You go to Experian and whatever to actually look this over. I don't remember where you went.
There's an additional review function. I think what you're alluding to is, in addition to having an in-house attorney review compliance function and a process for review of this whole program, there's also an additional function of review that comes through the intermediary of the credit reporting agency where they review it. They made some suggested changes here having to do with typeface and font size that go to this, how big does the opt-out notice have to be with respect to one of the mailers here. So there is that dimension to it.
Do they look at this and make an evaluation at the pre-screening stage? Do they say yes or no?
Well, I guess they do look at it. They do make suggestions. I think, honestly, Your Honor, that their contracts say that ultimately FCRA compliance is up to you. We're not guaranteeing anything, but they're happy to address it and alert you to things. One thing I wanted to follow up on, since my time is short with respect to the willfulness, is I frankly can't see how this could be found to be willful when Judge Castillo's view of the law and the latitude afforded within the Cole decision is the view that was the view of HLC here and its in-house attorney, which is that mortgage products are different. You can't put everything in the mailer. It's complicated. There's a lot of underwriting requirements. And when you look at that in relation to the Safeco case, that's exactly what the Supreme Court said, that even if this person or this lender was a hair short of meeting the standard, they're essentially playing within the 20-yard lines, Your Honor. And if we're all playing within the 20-yard lines, and in particular when the district court judge has embraced the view of the law that is a view of the law that's reasonable, then you're right at midfield, and there's no way, or at least at midfield, and there's no way that that's going to be able to be found to be willful. And we believe that while we think that it's important maybe for the mortgage industry to address the firm offer question here, since this is the first case Your Honors have had, we think that there's no way that even if somehow this didn't meet the standard, that this could in any way, shape, or form be willful. It doesn't need any remand were that to be the focus, and that decision can be made in the same way it was made in the Supreme Court decision. Now, I see my...
Yeah, well, I don't
want
to say
up.
That Notre Dame's been playing within the 20-yard line for a while, so I'm not sure that's a good way to go, but anyway,
Thank you, Mr. Margaret. Did you want to make a concluding remark? I didn't want you cut off.
I wanted to say that there are many other things counsel complained about the mailer that are inaccurate. The 4.27% is there in the mailer and correlates to the $200,000 amount. I also wanted to say this isn't a case that is about truth in lending errors or consumer fraud or anything of the sort. And counsel seeks to denigrate the conduct here as somehow fraudulent. That's not the claim in the case. It's FCRA compliance. I think that one last thing she noted, it's of a technical nature, about the letter they sent to the court about the recent interagency guidance. Actually, that doesn't even apply to this lender. We didn't take the time to respond to you to point that out, but this is not a federally chartered lender or a subsidiary of it. That doesn't mean that we don't find it persuasive and wouldn't look at it, but it just shows that they're citing something that doesn't even apply to this kind of lender.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Varga.
Thank you.
You had no more time, Ms. Combs, but I let Mr. Varga have some time, so you may have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, if you look at the box on the front of this mailer, or Your Honors, if you look at the box on the front of this mailer, it doesn't say a loan amount, new payment for the first month, 322. No interpretation of offer allows a prominent representation that a loan has a monthly payment of 322 when the monthly payments are $500. The FCRA requires an offer. The defendant would have you move, just interpret out of the requirements, the requirement that there be an offer. There's a dispute between the parties about whether or not that 322 payment, that 1% payment, was available to a borrower at the beginning of, you know, of the loan. In fact, the court should not have ruled because on summary judgment because there was a dispute. The salesman, the manager of the salesman, said that it was not a 1% rate; it was a 1% minimum payment, and therefore the 1%.
What's the semantic difference between that, what you just said, a rate versus a payment?
And, Your Honor, I had a lot of trouble. I was a high school math major, and I didn't quite understand it. But here's how it works. You can make a minimum payment of 1% of the principal in the first year. That's a 1% MTA option arm. That means that the borrower has the option of making a very small payment, way below amortization. But it is not a 1% rate. And that's what the sales manager said this product was. There was a dispute, and the trial court should not have granted summary judgment. The trier of fact should have been able to determine whether or not, you know, what was this thing that they were selling. But also, counsel argues that you can never disclose in a mortgage product the kinds of things that we're asking. And we don't think that's true. If you look at the H&R Block mailer that we have attached to our reply brief, it shows how you can disclose the terms. For example, it would be, we will offer you X if A, B, C are true. You can make that kind of disclosure in the context of a mortgage. They've done it with H&R Block, which was a subprime lender, and so that their excuse, oh, this is a mortgage, doesn't.
Thank you, Ms. Combs.
Thank you very much,
Barbara. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to